Coming from the Lower Haight in San Francisco, it's the Are You Serious Show.
Are you serious?
I'm Are You Serious, and this is my show. Welcome once again to the Are You Serious Show, the special Thanksgiving show. And stay away from those turkeys. You know, it's because the human race raises turkeys in conjunction with pigs and cows that the entire human species is going to be wiped out before the end of the year by the avian flu. And so it's all your fault.
Those Did you say the alien flu?
Did I say the
bird
alien?
Flu.
I thought I said the avian flu. But I might have said the alien flu.
That's another thing that's
coming on. Coming on hot and heavy.
So soon we're not going to be able to eat aliens. Great.
There goes your holiday plans.
And there's nothing like a tasty alien on Thanksgiving Day, actually. But we do have Tim Kavanaugh with us, the editor from Reason Magazine, an appropriate Thanksgiving guest. I think at the beginning of America, the settlers and the Indians got together. They made a fair trade agreement about some beads and a bridge or an island or something like that. All fair.
It's all fair.
We kid. anyway, we are here with the gang of three. We've got Jeff Deal, and and we've got Diana, the great Thanksgiving lover, Brown.
Hi, are you? Hi, Jeff.
Hello.
Welcome. Come right in. You can't afford to miss this.
Step right up.
Well, I was looking on Boing Boing a little bit ago, and I discovered that a hormone that can suppress appetite has been discovered, and it sheds new light on the war against obesity, according to a study published quite recently. Apparently, there's a hormone called obestestin. Let's try that
again.
Obestatin, actually.
You call it
what you want, but it's a sibling to a hormone called ghrelin, and I know with these names it's starting to sound like, you know, maybe we're going back into the...
Greenland.
Exactly. That's what we're battling dwarves again in the Twin Towers. But in reality, there's these two hormones that exist right inside our own bodies. And they're called the dueling hormones because one will suppress the appetite and the other will increase the appetite. So who knew? Right in your own tummy, these two hormones existed. In addition to being able to suppress the appetite or and control obesity, the Imperial College in London believe that the hormone level of ghrelin could be increased and stimulate the appetite in patients with, anorexia or AIDS or cancer. So this is very interesting.
So I always knew my stomach was at war with itself.
See?
Yeah. I don't understand. Isn't the having anorexia a result of some problem with the hormones to begin with? And...
Well, you know, and I could be misquoting, but actually anorexia is considered to be, in addition to a physiological difficulty,
psychological
right. Exactly.
It's happening in the brain.
And they're hoping that by increasing the desire for hunger in the person. But I'm not really sure how that would work because it is shown to be very psychologically driven. Exactly. It's that they have impulses and in their mind, or sometimes voices in their mind telling them they can't eat because they're unattractive and ugly. But
maybe they're hearing the voices of all of our food.
Maybe. Or of all the commercials telling us we aren't complete without
the turkeys. The turkeys are trying to send them.
This could be tryptophan backlash. I mean, maybe the turkeys have actually been, you know, evolving in order to put us all into a never-ending slumber one Thanksgiving.
There's always been this thing about, I mean, losing weight. Everybody's so concerned about losing weight. And all this stuff keeps on coming along. And none of it ever seems to, like, really work. Quite right, does
like
it?
Dr. Atkins died of heart failure.
Various drugs and so forth that are supposed to suppress
well,
appetite.
Well, oftentimes the drugs that suppress
burn
appetite
burn fat and all that.
Do horrible things to you.
Yeah, I'm just suspicious about how quickly something like this is going to come along. I just sort of, you know, forgot about the whole notion of losing weight, as you can
see. Well, to help you remember, in Scotland, scientists have decided that obestatin, the hormone that controls hunger, could possibly help improve your memory.
I'm there. So we're here with Tim Cavanaugh once again, editor of the Reason online site, and you do the
Reason.com.
Reason.com, and you do the help to edit the Hit and Run, which is a very vital day-to-day resource. I really enjoy that a lot. And before we came on the show, Tim was talking about how he is a big fan of inauthenticity, which I actually have written about. I wrote a piece called Authentic Inauthenticity way back in the early 90s. Why do you appreciate ebullient fraudulence so much?
Well, I don't know if it's ebullient fraudulence, but I think we put a premium on being authentic in a lot of ways.
Bruce.
Yeah, Bruce is the perfect example,
Bruce.
Right?
Yeah.
You know, and this is why Suck should still be around, because we did a great article about how Meatloaf is better than Bruce.
But that's obvious.
Yeah, I mean, it's all the earth-shaking operatic angst, you know, without any of the actual work that you have to do.
With no content.
Yeah.
Nice.
And, you know, it's like, you know, British pop and things like, and Japanese pop. I mean, really, the reason that there is a big cult of Japanese pop is that there is no expectation of authenticity. They all know they're just doing American stuff. And there isn't even really, like, any kind of consciousness of you know, we're commenting on the American style or something. They just like it, and they like to adopt it.
Not only, I mean, they're very conscious about wanting to maintain their inauthenticity. My friend Joey Ito, who sort of tried to bring the rave movement, to some extent successfully brought the rave movement in the early 90s, sort of tried to bring some earnest psychedelic philosophy into Japan, and other leading lights of their pop culture said, you know, people don't want any authenticity here. Let's stay away from that.
That's I'm all for that. People, you know, it goes back to Reason's respect for, you know, experiments in living and that kind of thing. That you can try on any kind of lifestyle that interests you.
So, I mean, there's something authoritarian about somebody's authenticity. It's like, I'm real, man, and, you know.
Sure.
It's
obviously deadly in, like, the hip-hop community, right? I mean, isn't that really what got Tupac killed, was that, you know, he had gone to some sort of Fame-style school for the performing arts and clearly had trouble, you know, wanted to live that down and wanted to be more street than anybody else. I'm not going to say that's what killed him, but obviously that was part of what was driving him.
Right.
Today you talk about Camille Paglia and Madonna.
Well, actually, it's about a month ago.
I'm sorry. the time shifting on the RU show gets me. But about a month ago, you had a great article on Reason about Madonna and comparing Camille Paglia's feelings about her with her new Lady of the Manor Born stance as a Mrs. Ritchie. And would you just share a little bit about that for those?
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, part of what you have to accept if you're willing to accept complete inauthenticity is sometimes somebody's inauthenticity is also going to be really annoying. You know, so I mean, there's
like her
what
new
could
accent.
Be, yeah, what could be more irritating than Madonna doing an English accent and wearing, you know, jodhpurs? Or whatever it is, but
well, I mean, she could be like what was it, Jessica Simpson, when she went on Saturday Night Live and she was lip syncing and the
Ashley Simpson. Come on,
sister.
Jessica's 100%.
All right, Ashley.
Grade A US.
I get them.
But to be fair, Ashley just they had the wrong soundtrack. So
yeah, no, it wasn't.
Where little Ashley can really sing. Well,
yeah. If you ever saw that clip, she's vocalize. Actually pretty funny in her way.
She
of,
is.
Yeah.
She's the punkier of the two sisters.
Yeah, no, she's definitely.
I understand that. I try not to keep that too much track of it, although I have enjoyed seeing the clips of Jessica in her little Daisy Duke outfit.
Yeah.
Who can not love that?
Who can resist the Daisy Dukes?
Should I shift gear into this real serious political question that I have written down here? Yeah, I guess I might as well. I saw actually Christopher Hitchens last night on television, which makes us somehow relevant. I would say quite a few libertarians supported the Iraq invasion.
Yeah, including maybe, a reason.
Maybe less than average. Definitely a lot more than the left or liberals. Although, I mean, even there are a few. Did you think, and you were against it, do you think people who argue for it have a leg to stand on? Or a leg left to stand on?
I've tried to remain sympathetic to all the arguments and, give everybody a fair shake. And the best way that I have sort of broken down the dichotomy is, on the one hand, you'll have people who, we're all about freedom, we're all about the individual right to choose, and we're all about people doing whatever they want, but then you're going to support, you're not going to support, but you're going to say that I don't care if the people of Iraq are, being, I guess they weren't really actually thrown into plastic shredders, but, the various things that were done to people in Iraq, which were pretty unpleasant.
Some kind of shredder. But
right. And
paper.
So on that I think, you could make the argument that that's a logical disconnect. You could also make the argument it's a logical disconnect that, you're a libertarian, you don't want the government inspecting your eggs. You don't want the government issuing building codes. You don't want the government doing any of this stuff, but suddenly you want the government to go 10,000 miles away to a country where we don't even speak the language and decide that we're going to unseat their government. That's a logical disconnect in my view. So,
to me, it seems like it's also a disaster of ideology. I mean, there was this idea that Iraq would part its legs and the United States would enter and there would be flowers and hugs and it would radiate.
How romantic.
It would radiate such beauty that the rest of the Arab world would swoon.
Yeah.
And I mean, that was over, before it started, it seemed to me. But there are still people who believe
well,
that.
In a way, I don't want to engage the argument about whether it's a disaster or not, because I feel like once you've done that, then you're accepting their terms, right? You're already accepting that, yes, it is the purview of the American government to go and decide what to do in other sovereign countries. Yeah. So that if you – and, it's like the old joke. We've already established what kind of woman you are. Now we're just haggling over the price. Right. It's like if you're suddenly – now you're just saying – oh, it's a disaster or it's not a disaster, and you end up with, in 20 years, the hawks are going to be able to say they were right about Iraq. I really feel like
maybe.
There will be something.
I think there are definitely there's principles and there's strategy, and it seems to me like a disaster on both ends. But
yeah, well, I certainly looks like a disaster in strategy, and and in principle, I definitely think it is. I mean, we've regularized this notion that that every place on this planet is the purview of the American government. So
right, the politics of empire. Basically. Speaking of Michael Jackson, as a libertarian, what would you say about the age of sexual consent?
Well, obviously, it's way too high.
All right. Dude, you're welcome back in time.
I don't know. Michael Jackson, I think, is sort of off the charts in what you can say in the way of politics. Because you have everybody, and this is sort of a core of, all sort of individual rights thinking is that children are the purview of their parents, and, they're not at the age of consent, whatever you think the age of consent should be. 18 is it's pretty high, actually, right? I mean, it's long after puberty and all that kind of sort of stuff. Right. So, this is part of why the reason there's been a big disconnect between the Catholic Church and liberal society on this thing, because they never say it, but they have a hard time getting around the idea that, like, somebody, if there's grass on the field, you can't play ball.
Right.
And back to the thing about children. These are situations where, like, repeatedly, again and again, many different sets of parents or, single parents or whatever the case may be, were sending their kids to go and sleep with Michael Jackson. So there's something, I don't really know where that's what I mean about beyond politics. Like,
like you, they love pop inauthenticity and Michael. I mean, Michael did it very well.
Yeah, he did it better than anyone.
This is really, I think, maybe like one of the most taboo areas for conversation. I mean, has reason ever held a discussion about the age of consent?
No. See? And I would say that's probably one that's radioactive enough.
What are you guys hiding?
Yeah, no, what is true.
A few years ago, I read
teen orgies.
Well, you say teen, and I was reading an article a few years ago. Some members of the extreme religious right were suggesting that young women should get pregnant in their teens and have their children in their teens because they're healthiest, and they will have the support of their parents, and they will be able to raise perfect future Christian children. So yeah.
Somehow I have the feeling that that's a good point at which to break for some music.
Forever now, Father, I'm forever.
serious.
You know, that's one where, you know, teen parents, I don't know if you hear that phrase used a lot anymore, of like kids having kids and all that stuff, but, you know, teen parents turn out really not to be bad parents at any higher rates than bad parents of any other age.
Yeah, because we had the theory when we were having another discussion that the crime rate, was that?
Yes, yes, from Freakonomics.
Freakonomics, yeah.
They were saying
that gone down and
Roe versus Wade.
Because kids aren't having babies anymore.
Right.
Unwanted babies.
Exactly. So it's brought down
killing
the crime
criminals
rate.
In the womb.
Yeah.
That's exactly the quote you had. That was a
kill the criminal in the womb.
Although I've seen that disputed, and not disputed from, you know, people that you would expect. I've
actually
seen sort of a compelling case that those numbers are, that's sort of pie in the sky.
It struck me as pie in the sky, but
it's you know, that's a good thing about that book, though. It raises all sorts
great
of
questions.
Disturbing questions. Yeah.
Yes, like real estate agents and the KKK. What do they have in common? That was
What was that?
It's was that? I can't recall exactly. The only thing I can remember right now is the verbiage.
The
go
final
ahead.
Two. Yeah. We're back with Tim Kavanaugh, and we're talking about various things, including libertarianism, and I'm just going to get real harsh now about
we can take it.
All you damn libertarians. And I do, one of the things that sort of bugs me about the libertarians and people on the right in general is that they're always telling us how great everything is, or a lot of them are. Yeah, you know, it's kind of like, well, if you were a coal miner back in 1860, you'd have been dead by the age of 35 from black lung disease. And to me, so what I think is that, on the other hand, if it was 1965, I'd have a job that I'd be able to keep for my life. And if I lost my job, the welfare check would be enough for me to live on until I found another one. So, I mean, what do you think about the whole libertarian thing of telling everybody how it's a tool of oppression? No,
it's true. I mean, there's an amount of Pollyannaism that creeps in, and you know, and especially if you just start doing things on autopilot, where you're only thinking ideologically and always trying to find the angle. You know, we talked before about Hurricane Katrina, and I think that's a perfect example. It's like, to some extent, you have to say, all right, this is not necessarily a thing that's going to help me make my case. And for me to go out and find, you know, all the ways that it does help my case is really cherry picking and that kind of thing.
Right.
You know, on the other hand, reason, I think, certainly does a pretty good job of asking hard questions. And, you know, we get a lot of flack about it. We had a thing a while back about the FDA and, you know, laying out the case that before the FDA, there was, you know, some certain thousand numbers of deaths every year in the United States from quack remedies. And it's not like this was a thing where you could say buyer beware or that kind of thing, because, you know, by the time you know about it, these weren't things where people had established track records. They would fly by night and disappear and, you know, come into another town where nobody heard about it.
Sure, yeah. Snake oil salesman.
Right, snake oil salesman. And, so, you know, and it was making, and in a lot of ways, the FDA has been accepted by the industry because they've set the standards for how to test products and the peer reviewing and all that kind of stuff, you know, all of which you can use, you can find wrongs in the way they do that. Obviously, the big pharmaceutical companies use those as ways of keeping out competitors now and all that kind of thing. But before that, you did not have an ideal situation. And the libertarian ideal, if that's what it is, was not something people would want to live under. So we had an article, you know, addressing that point, not really, as I recall, not really coming to any, you know, hard
conclusion.
If
I remember correctly, there was a debate. There were several people taking different positions on that.
This was just an article.
Really?
And in fact, I think it was a book review. But we got a lot of hate mail from people, like, how can you be supporting the FDA? And
well, I will praise Reason for having a wide variety of opinions and not being, you know, ultra ideological and so forth.
Yeah.
You wrote
probably, you know, I don't know if that's really a good survival strategy, really, because people like, you know, something that's going to be dependent. Like the National Review never really has any. The New Republic never has anything interesting. I don't know if always, you know, being willing to question your own ideology is a smart financial move or survival move in a lot of ways, because people like to see, you know, a dependable ideology. And something like the New Republic is, you know, it's a magazine that's never interesting in any way, but it's, you know, the people who put the money up for it know what they're going to get out of it. And so, you know, on the other hand, if you do that, people as people are doing, they stop reading the New Republic. So, you know, then you have to keep it interesting.
Right. Well, it's kind of like people who are looking for a libertarian magazine, an ideologically correct libertarian magazine, might not be happy with Reason. People who are looking for a generalist magazine that's libertarian will get a lot more pleasure out of Reason than people who aren't libertarians. I sound like I'm making a pitch for God's sakes.
Go ahead.
What's your cut, Dave? Yeah.
Nick better lather me with lots of publicity for this. But no, I actually do think, you know, people who aren't libertarian can enjoy the magazine.
You know, and within any sort of movement, you definitely get, you know, a lot of complaints about strange things, just sort of not, you know, lack of tolerance about weird stuff. We get a ton of complaints about our clothing, where Nick Gillespie always wears like a leather jacket and a black
T-shirt.
When I
see him on TV, sold
that,
me.
Like, that gets more comments than like anything else you can name about Reason. And it's like, you know, he's trying to look like the Fonz or he's whatever it is. And, you know, partly it's D.C. It's just that, like, in D.C., to not be wearing a blue coat and a white shirt and a red tie is like, you know, you might as well be wearing a Cat in a Hat or something.
Well, I mean, it's also like libertarians, some of them are genuinely culturally conservative and some are totally like culturally libertine.
And they are welcome.
Whatever.
The cultural conservatives are welcome, as are the libertarians.
Right, because they support everybody's right to do whatever they happen to want within Reason. I'm going to... I use that word Reason and completely by accident. So I'm going to ask you one more question about a great piece you wrote for Reason quite a while back. I think it was included there in their collection, if I remember correctly. It was called E Pluribus Umbrage, and it was about the industry built around people getting offended. and I mean, if there's one thing I hate about the left, it's, you know, that the hypersensitivity it seems to me may be a bigger threat to free speech than mindless patriotism even. What did you uncover in that article, and give us some thoughts?
Well, that everybody's got one, just as in I Am a Walrus.
Everybody's got a piece of umbrage.
Yeah, because you know, there's a Hindu anti-defamation, and you know, some of these are really small groups. I think in some cases it'll be one guy, you know, sending out faxes and stuff like that, who were the ones I really wanted to concentrate on and look at, you know, the way it can be endlessly broke down. One thing that was developing at the time, and in hindsight I probably should have given more, I might have reframed the article a little bit, is the way that the right has really adopted, is really taking the lead these days on identity politics. And I think that's a really interesting topic.
Feeling picked on kind of thing?
Oh, yeah, feeling picked on. Christians are picked on. You know, true patriots.
That drives me nuts, too.
Yeah, conservative. You can't be a conservative in, you know, the city of Los Angeles. If you're a conservative in Hollywood, there's a lot of that. And, you know, every Christians are obviously everywhere Christians go in this country. It's amazing that they can survive.
They only have the White House and the Congress. Poor babies.
Right.
Oh, so little to turn to. So, although now with Katrina being an act of God, I mean, what can, you know, Bush can't really get mad at God since, according to him, God is on his side. But I digress.
No, you're welcome to think. Speaking of feeling picked on, I mean, the whole gun thing, you know, it's like as a person from the psychedelic culture, you know, if all I had to do was get a license and wait a few days, you wouldn't hear me whining so much. I said, well, if I could only have, you know, 20 hits at a time, I'm not complaining. So why do they complain so much? It seems a little excessive to me.
That's a great way of framing it, and I'm going to have to put that into practice at some point. But, you know, might be that... That guns are specifically singled out in the Constitution for protection.
That's true.
That they're for self-defense, and, you know, in depending on your way of looking at it, they may be for defense against the government, and therefore being required to register them with the government is a violation.
That's true.
So,
but I mean, the best defense against the government is ketamine blow darts.
Don't let that out on the air. Good thing we're only podcasting, because if that went out over the air, you know,
it would cause disruption. Anyway, I want to thank Tim Kavanaugh for coming in, and I hope he'll come in again sometime. and bring some good food from Burger King along with you next time for all
I
of us.
Shall.
And yeah. Thanks again, man.
Thanks.
We would like to thank Tim Cavanaugh for joining us on the show this week. The music you heard was Never Feel Good, a mashup by Party Ben. Next week, comedian Will Franken returns. The Are You Serious Show is part of the Mondo Globo Network. Subscribe to all of our shows at mondoglobo.net. Thanks for listening, and don't be afraid of the dark.